got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us till this country that we love's undivided.
Welcome back. Yep. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, this Monday, November 13th, 2023. Why does all of this matter? Practically speaking, let me just finish all of this, you know, hullabaloo, and we'll get on to other business. Why does all of this matter? You know, who cares which way the flag faces? Well, if my suspicion is correct, then basically what it means is it speaks to infiltration and subversion. You know, that basically the regulars or the permanent military, or, you know, what was originally considered the National Military Establishment, the NME, what we now refer to in the post-Eisenhower days as the military-industrial complex, it is basically conscripted to, let's say, un-American or even anti-American activities. This speaks to a volume of things that I think maybe we sum up by saying America's, you know, the American system is woefully broken. The technocrats would say, well, let's throw the baby out with the bathwater then. That's not what I'm saying. But it's really not broken. It's operating exactly as it was intended by the revisionists. Let's just start with the progressive era. You know, you can go to R.J. Pistrito's Birth of the Administrative State, what it means, where it came from, and what it means for limited government. And you know, if you're not familiar, dive down that rabbit hole a little bit and learn about the administrative fourth branch that consolidates all powers and functions to itself. That's a fact, and that's not hyperbolic at all. Sometimes in the same, you know, usually in the same institution, sometimes in the same person. That's a fact. I'll give you a practical example in a minute. Well, you know, speaking of the, you know, mention of the Secret Service thing, you know, whenever there's a officer-involved shooting, the police investigate the police. It's internal affairs. It's not the same thing. Okay, it's still part of the brotherhood. There's still politics, internal politics involved. Anyway, to buttress my suspicion and my assertion, I give you Carol Quigley's The Anglo-American Establishment. Go look it up. For starters, the cover is provocative. Why is the American flag, why is the United States flag upside down and backwards? Inset in the British Union. Why is that? Was Carol Quigley just a crazy guy? Was he a kook? Guy Bill Clinton said was his mentor at Georgetown? This book was posthumously published. Why? Because he wanted to live a long, healthy life, perhaps? Amazon says, Quigley exposes the secret societies established in London in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes. Quigley explains how these men worked in union to begin their society to control the world. That sounds serious. He explains how all the wars from that time were deliberately created to control the economies of all the nations. Wouldn't you want to have the militaries in tow to some extent? Infiltration and subversion. You know, so this goes way back to, you know, let's just say Plato's Republic, a.k.a. you know, a technocratic regime, a.k.a. Bertrand Russell's scientific dictatorship. everyone is goose stepping in lockstep. From Pastrito's Birth of the Administrative State, where it came from and what it means for limited government, and, you know, just a couple of excerpts. So he cites Gary Lawson's Rise and Rise of the Administrative State. Lawson opened his article, which was published in the Harvard Law Review back in 1994. So, you know, conspiracy blog. Gary Lawson's Rise and Rise of the Administrative State opens, "The post-New Deal administrative state is unconstitutional, and its validation by the legal system amounts to nothing less than a bloodless constitutional revolution." That's pretty shocking language. Has it abated since then? What is the situation now? Is it better? Rhetorical questions. So, in R.J. Pastrito's The Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From and What It Means for Limited Government, two excerpts. He begins, "For those who hold the Constitution of the United States in high regard and who are concerned about the fate of its principles, in our contemporary practice of government, the modern state ought to receive significant attention. The reason for this is that the ideas that gave rise to what is today called the administrative state, quote unquote, are fundamentally at odds with those that gave rise to our Constitution. In fact, the original progressive era architects," and this is ironic because at the moment, the very moment that Pastrito was, this was being published, was the same moment that Hillary Clinton said in the CNN YouTube debate, she's asked, you know, are you a liberal? She says, "Heck, I'm a progressive like those early American progressives." Basically, you're a terrorist. You're a treasonous individual by admission. So Pastrito, "In fact, the original progressive era architects of the administrative state understood this quite clearly as they made advocacy of this new approach to government. They called it agnostic. You know, administration of government is agnostic." No, it's not. "As they made advocacy of this new approach to government, an important part of their direct, open, comprehensive attack on the American Constitution." You have to understand, like Thomas McNeice observed in the Rees Committee hearings, a person's ideology affects how they approach problems and the solutions that they bring forward. If you think that people should be left to themselves to, you know, appeal to the God of heaven, the creator of heaven and earth, the Lord God Almighty, and leave justice in his hands primarily, then you will think differently than a technocrat who says, well, you know, people are idiots, like Bernays, you know, who said in the Engineering of Consent that, you know, there's always a lag in information dispersal, but even if there wasn't, and I'm paraphrasing, people are still stupid, so they'd have to still be propagandized. Those are disparate views that affect the outcome of recommendations, obviously. That goes without saying. But we've been conned and beguiled to believe otherwise by charlatans and sophists and silver-tongued folks. So the other excerpt, is Pastrito writes, "The second tenet of separation of powers, the prohibition of combining functions." So what did Madison say? Madison said that accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary in the same hands, whether of one, a few, or many, and whether hereditary, self-appointed, or elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. Separation of powers creates a slow government function for obvious and self-explanatory reasons. All you need to do is whip a lynch mob into a frenzy, and by morning, everyone will be in remorse. And I think of, you know, Hayek's words from chapter 10 of The Road to Serfdom. It is here that the new type of party, organized on military lines, comes in. People want someone who's strong enough to get things done, action for action's sake. Back to Pastrito. The second tenet of separation of powers, the prohibition on combining functions, has fared no better in modern constitutional and administrative law. As Gary Lawson explains in The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, that is, quote, the destruction of this principle of separation of powers is perhaps the crowning jewel of the modern administrative revolution. And this is worse than a monarchy, because where is the neck to grab? And again, this is something that Americans have been conditioned to think is normal. No neck to grab? You know, if you don't like what's going on at Facebook, who do you call? If you don't like what's going on at Google, who do you call? Microsoft, who do you call? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And more, you know, government functionaries are operating on the same basis. Press 1, press 9, press 3, press 7. That's all conditioning to get you to, you know, develop an induced state of learned helplessness. Well, there's nothing I can do. Nobody I can talk to anyway. I'll quit calling. I wonder what the statistics on that are. How many times you have to press 3, press 9, press 7, press 5 until you just give up. And then, you know, stop thinking that you need to do something or find a neck to grab, so to speak. Continuing, the destruction of this principle of separation of powers is perhaps the crowning jewel of the modern administrative revolution. Administrative agencies routinely combine all three governmental functions in the same body and even in the same people within that body, end quote. That's Lawson's quote from The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State. And Pastrito goes on. His example here is the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, and then Pastrito gives the further excerpt from Lawson's Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, which reads, this is the example that sounds hyperbolic, but this is really what's happening. The commission promulgates substantive rules of conduct, that, looking at the FTC, but it's the same thing for any agency. Is the military an agency? The Air Force was the first officially, you know, 100% agency coming out of the National Security Act. Anyway, the commission promulgates substantive rules of conduct. The commission then considers whether to authorize investigations into whether the commission's rules have been violated. If the commission authorizes an investigation, the investigation is conducted by the commission, which reports its findings to the commission. If the commission thinks that the commission's findings warrant an enforcement action, the commission issues a complaint. The commission's complaint that a commission rule has been violated is then prosecuted by the commission and adjudicated by the commission. The commission adjudication can either take place before the full commission or before a semi-autonomous administrative law judge. If the commission chooses to adjudicate before an administrative law judge rather than before the commission and the decision is adverse to the commission can appeal to the commission. Circular reasoning, anyone? I mean, this is insane. It's insane. This is insane to any normal thinking person, you know, to anyone other than a sinister, diabolical individual. This is criminally insane. Who would allow this? So if you want to weaponize a system, hey, this is a great way to do it. Implausibly deniable sort of fashion. Oh, no, we didn't mean to do that. It was just an accident. We should play that clip of Peter Thiel. you know? Talking about how America is not a republic, it's not a democracy, it is a system very much dominated by the technocratic agencies. This is a guy with a whole lot of background on the subject. Former Sullivan and Cromwell guy who teaches monopoly at Stanford. That's why you should kind of, you know, your goal should be something along the lines of monopoly. And he knows whereof he speaks. You know, a guy who understands lawfare very well. Just ask the folks at Gawker. And he says, you know, America is dominated by technocratic agencies. In that conversation with Tyler Cowen. Played that clip many times. So what does this have to do with the military, Chris? Well, there is the discussion, historically speaking, of unjust orders. The duty to disobey. So, you know, problem. What if my suspicion is well-founded? What if there was a reason that Quigley put that flag upside down and backwards inset in the British Union on the cover of his book? The back cover, by the way, reads, "No country that values its safety should allow what the Milner Group accomplished, that is, that a small number of men would be able to wield such power in administration and politics, should be given almost complete control over the publication of documents relating to their actions, should be able to exercise such influence over the avenues of information that create public opinion, and should be able to monopolize so completely the writing and the teaching of the history of their own period." You know, so the implication is, so to sanitize the nefarious aspects of their efforts. What if there's a reason that he put, you know, the cover, the image on the cover of the Anglo-American establishment is what it is? What if there's a reason? What if there was a message there he was trying to send to the American people? Maybe there's a reason there's a suicide epidemic, and that, you know, Mr. Learned Helplessness himself Martin Seligman was called in to see if we can dial this system back a little bit so it's not so obvious what's going on. Maybe there's a reason that people are so upset, because they know that what they're doing is not what they were told. What is happening in distant lands is not what we're being told. We're fighting for freedom and democracy. Are we really? What are we defending? Let's define terms here. What are we defending exactly? Maybe Smedley Butler was right. Maybe 200 miles off our own coast, patrolling that is enough. You know, if you're to believe the establishment version of history, maybe we should look closer at home more often instead of being off on these escapades. So if all of this, you know, if we put all of this together, what does it mean? It means maybe, you know, the patriotic messaging is disingenuous that we're getting. Maybe we're being fed that by a certain contingent for a specific purpose. And, you know, the administrative function says, you know, of course you have a duty to disobey, but sometimes, and seemingly arbitrarily and capriciously, that can be dismissed. Of course you have a, you know, if you look up the duty to disobey, you know, unjust orders. In our own recent history in America, there have been some interesting examples. All right, I'm done with that. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us
800-724-2719 extension 3. 800-724-2719 extension 3.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Well, our story begins, you know, with old St. Augustine. Way back in days of old, he reported on this theme. A mighty emperor had got himself a pirate who was a terrorizing people who were sailing on the open seas.
What meanest thou by keeping hostile possession of the sea? What meanest thou by seizing the whole earth? Because I do it with a petty ship, I'm called a robber. Whilst thou, who does the same with a great fleet, art styled emperor.
And old St. Augustine thought that was a pretty smart answer. Cause there are pirates and emperors, but they're really the same thing. When they go and try to reach the same ends by using the same means. Well, they do it big or they do it small, from a little tiny boat or from the hallowed halls. Bully is as bully does, that's plain to see. Speaking of bullies, what would you say about a gang of vicious,
yeah,
low-down
exactly
thugs?
Exactly. So, just one other quick thing real fast in a second here, and then we'll move on. Just to sort of, you know, underscore this point, I want to play the clip, actually, of Peter Thiel in a second, including the question for background that he was asked by, I think, a student in the audience at George Mason University. You know, and again, people I don't think really appreciate who Peter Thiel is. You know, Bilderberg steering committee member Peter Thiel. He's not a dummy. You know, Palantir has offices in Davos. So, the orb, one orb to rule them all. You know, was it the same orb in Saudi Arabia that Donald Trump put his hands on? Anyway. What if there are pirates for emperors these days? Soldiers of fortune, you think you're cool? What if you're a pirate for an emperor? What if that's been engineered? Pirates for emperors. You know, if Fitta was right, and that whole mindset of creating a Prussian, you know, mercenary force for hire was ever brought to bear, brought to the marketplace, what would it look like? I wonder what it would look like. It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? You know, Bertrand Russell, Fitta laid it down that education should aim at destroying free will, all that kind of stuff, you know. What if that actually somehow was brought to the marketplace? What would that look like? Anyway, Peter Thiel, last couple of minutes here, if we can squeeze this in. Do we have time? Let me look real fast. Do we have time for that? Yeah, we do, right? So Peter Thiel, what is America? What kind of, what should we call it? This is Peter Thiel. Go ahead, please.
Right.
Thank you very much.
My email is Googleable.
And my name is Eric Brimmen, and the project's name is Enterprise Cities. You will hear from me later.
This side.
Feels like a little bit of a follow-up, but in a 2009 Cato Unbound article, you discussed your disillusionment with democracy as a source of innovation and change in government and politics, and expressed your interest in cyberspace, outer space, and seasteading. Is there a 2015 update on how you're feeling about government and politics and innovation?
So writing is always such a dangerous thing, you know. I remember a professor once told me back in the 80s that writing a book was more dangerous than having a child, because you could always disown a child if it turned out badly. You could never disown anything that you've written. And you know, the Cato Unbound article, it was a 1,000-word essay. It was late at night. I quickly typed it off. I sent it to someone else to review. Said, "Oh, nothing controversial in here at all." And my retrospective was that if you actually ask someone to double-check things for whether or not it's controversial, you already deep down know that you should double-check it yourself. But I think sort of my updated version on it would be that, you know, I sort of made the case that I thought democracy and capitalism weren't quite compatible. The updated version I would give is, you know, it's not at all clear that we're living in anything resembling a democracy. You know, we're living in a sort of a representative republic, but then that's modified through a judicial system. And then, of course, that's been largely superseded by these very unelected agencies of one sort or another, which really drive most of the decision-making. And so I think calling our society a democracy, whatever may be good or bad about democracy, is very, very deeply misleading. We're not a republic. We're not a constitutional republic. We're actually sort of a state that's elected by these that's dominated by these very unelected technocratic agencies, and the.
All right, there you go. I think we can leave it there. I think, you know, suffice it to say, all of this does not bode well. It's time to be sober-minded, and if you would even think about voting for someone like, you know, Congressman Camacho, Gunbro Herrera, the AK guy, you should be ashamed of yourself, and you should not be called an American, in my humble estimation. This is ridiculous. This is life imitating art, and it should be a joke, but it's not funny. It's very juvenile. It's very infantile. It's very dangerous. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few.
After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember I still want you, and in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour. Where would we be in America without someone to tell us how and what to think? Or maybe that we shouldn't think, just, you know, parrot these kinds of things. Sit down, shut up, watch this, do that. Anyway, I digress. Let's go to the phones and grab David in Wisconsin. David, thanks for calling and for being patient. Welcome.
And good morning to you, Chris.
Thank you.
Well, That was an epic understatement. This is where we meet to commiserate about gaslighting, yeah. I have to say.
Glad that amused you.
it not only amused me, but it stimulated me somewhat. And I thought to myself, two of the areas or arenas would be a better choice of words, I guess, where gaslighting is more accelerated, in my opinion, just my opinion, is photographs and sports. First of all, with sports, people are put into something of a beta, something of a trance, mm-hmm. and are more susceptible to suggestions. And I'll get to that. But first of all, photographs. During my formative years, in my early adult years, one of the most famous photographs, I obviously would reject anyone that said it is not at least on the top 25 of the most famous Pulitzer Prize award photographs, is the one by Eddie Adams. Now, in that photograph, it's a wartime photograph, obviously you would know this, but for the younger listeners, it's a photograph of an older man, obviously in appearance, in the photograph, an older man in military uniform, street executing a younger man in what are called street clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, the gaslighting of that is that was perceived as, well, it was obviously, it was a culture shock that went around the world several times. But the backstory of it is, and obviously my studies, you know, I'm not one of these Peter Thiels of the world, thank God. So yeah. I wouldn't know all the facts and details. So there'd be a contradiction to a contradiction of anything you say about something like this. But I did my research to the best of my ability. And the backstory to this is Nguyen, street executed Nguyen. And it was as the result of him mass murdering an entire family of the soldier, of the general that street executed him. Now, that's the backstory as I understand it. I'm not saying that's, you know, like I said, I'm not privy to the finer details of things. But that's what hardly anyone was aware of because of a society that just loves to be entertained all the time, and the picture's entertainment enough, and the sound bite, you know, reading the headline, and that's good enough. I have to move on to something more entertaining and light and not as dreadful and real. So that's one thing that is a profound example of gaslighting.
Did we talk about this at some point in the past? Because I, you know, earlier this year, I recall something, but a few years ago, like back in 2019, I talked about Napalm Girl. And that there was the story that circulated for a while about her and the, you know, basically, you know, the PSYOP that, and more recently, like there's the CNN article, June 9, 2022, Napalm Girl at 50, the story of the Vietnam War's defining photo. And, you know, basically, finally it rolls out, you know, it's public information that this was a PSYOP. That was AP photographer Nick Ut in that case.
And I don't recall that discussion with you. So we probably didn't have that, but this is important for people to understand because these are obviously things that reach to the deepest depths of emotions, and then that can override logic. It can override the thinking processes.
That's the intention, obviously.
Yeah, that is absolutely, absolutely the intention of it.
Yep.
Now, to the sports aspect of it, and I called him when he was elected president, right from the start. I was a harsh critic, but not a overly harsh critic of Donald Trump by calling him a playboy, because he's been a playboy all his life. A serious-minded playboy, but nevertheless a playboy.
I think that's an understatement personally, because, you know, speaking of playboy, there are the pictures of him in the 90s with Jeffrey Epstein, for example.
Exactly.
And then, all of the controversial stuff that we all... That's public information as far as that's concerned.
Right. Public information. And like at the wrestling match, theater,
yeah.
as you say.
Yeah.
So, yep. But anyway, obviously, as I've described, it opens up people to a little more, to a lot more suggestion, no matter what the sport is. And yeah. I know you speak well of golf, and I'm not a fan of golf, a big fan of it, but I try to keep aware of situations that develop in our nation. And I have a friend that recently passed away that we golf from time to time. And the Kelly Tillman incident of gaslighting is one of the most extraordinary an example of the most extraordinary gaslighting of anything, in that, well, she's rehabilitated now. As of June, it says Kelly Tillman returns to the airwaves. Well, that's kind of true, but it isn't really totally accurate.
Yeah.
And for those that are younger and would not be aware of it, on the 2009 January 2008, front page of Golf Week is a photograph covering the entire page of a noose with some writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's about that controversy.
Can I just say, she said, lynch him in a back alley, is what she said.
Yeah, and that was as a follow-on to Nick Faldo saying, gang up on Woods.
Yeah. Right.
And this was in humor and in jest, but was it? Because this is like profound gaslighting. But the after, now that 15 years has came and went, on her Wikipedia page for Kelly Tillman, the aftermath is that since the incident, Kelly has appeared as an announcer on Tiger Woods PGA Tour 09, Tiger Woods PGA Tour 10, Tiger Woods PGA Tour 11 video games. So there isn't any animosity there. It's all playboys. This is playboys that are they're gaming everyone.
And what's being normalized in the process, and what is the synthesis of all of this convergence theory nonsense? It's not good. It's, you know, we're being moved along a dialectical continuum, and it's normalizing evil and wickedness.
Yeah, and it's a distraction from being able to focus on the most serious issues, so that we could come to some kind of, shall we say, coordinated efforts to repudiate all of the madness and violence and that's within our powers.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
We have, for example, and I'll just leave it at this. I have said this before, but I'm going to repeat it, because I'm a handicapped man. I was brain damaged. Get this, ladies and gentlemen. I was deliberately brain damaged after I came back from the war, from Vietnam, by doctors and nurses, with chemicals being injected into me against my passive objection. No fighting, no kicking, no screaming, no shooting, all right? But I defended myself successfully against being shaken down by these people that have convinced a lot of people that they have so much power in court. I successfully defended myself using one simple article in the Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, Clause 2. And it begins with the words, in all cases, and then after you pull all the weeds, it says, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. And you settle for nothing less, because it's never been to the Supreme Court to overturn the Constitution. And so it's a lack of knowledge that is destroying everyone's ability to stand up to the tyrants. And one last point about Peter Thiel. I don't know if this is true or not. I don't know much about him, but there have been reports and articles that he's a sodomite. I think that's a serious part of any issue in that it seems that the LGBT QRS on and on, seem to be attempting to force normal people to accept their deviance.
Yeah.
And I refuse to accept any deviance from what I view as the normal, which is a study of the scriptures, the Ten Commandments, and the writings that follow on from that, without taking things out of context. And it isn't complicated. Sodomy is a grievous sin against God and all mankind.
Amen.
Well, thanks for taking my call. It's always a pleasant thing to call in. But yeah, the sports, they aren't all bad, but don't go into a trance and go, yeah, this is the greatest. There's all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you. Goodbye.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated as always. And, you know, I will say, the immersion, we are immersed in deviancy and sexual immorality. Sin is sin in the Bible, but homosexuality is, and the things that sort of, you know, that are maybe, say, peripheral to that, God does not treat lightly. And it is spoken to in several places from cover to cover in the Bible. And there, I think there's a reason that we're being immersed in it, and that is essentially to turn everyone evil, the Lucifer effect, if you will, and Zimbardoan sort of language. The last thing that I'll say about what David was talking about is, you know, in talking about these kinds of, you know, the photography issue specifically, in the past, when I've talked about it, usually I mention the history of it, and there is the pedestrian aspect, you might say, but there's the more controversial sort of background. You know, just because it's not your intention to use photography that way does not mean that it was not someone else's, and that there are not sinister applications. And, you know, people could say, well, you could say that about anything, Chris, right? Absolutely. But when you go, for example, to the you know, there was a reason maybe that certain tribal folks historically said, I don't want you to take my picture because our belief is that that steals the soul. Maybe there was a reason they were saying those kinds of things. If you go look at the history of photography Wikipedia page, the list of folks involved in the history of photography, I think, is interesting and provocative. You know, if you're a person who kind of is interested in those kinds of things. And then there is the woo-woo kind of stuff. And I won't really get into that, but, you know, in theoretical physics, for example, you know, they're talking about being able to stare into a picture and look into it and see behind things. And maybe it does more than, you know, just capture an image. Maybe there's more going on there. Most people don't realize. Anyway, it's an interesting exploration to dive down the history of photography. And I would say there is a very, there's an esoteric and maybe call it religious sort of aspect to the history of photography. It's the end of the broadcast. I'll leave it at that because that's fun. Look into it for yourself if you're not aware, and I don't know, judge for yourself. Back to the phones. Chris in Virginia, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, fascinating show today, Chris.
Thank you.
And yeah, it wasn't it Jesus that said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free."
Or John 8. Someone else. It was a four-part conditional statement. If you continue in my word, then you will be my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Yep.
Can we apply that to today and the things that we're discussing and analyzing as far as existing in this world now?
So that makes me think of something that I was thinking of while, during David's call as well. And, you know, where is Simone Gold? Has anyone heard from Simone Gold lately? Probably not. We forgot about her like we forget about everything. But she spoke.
She got out of jail.
She spoke. She spoke recently at the
conference.
The what?
It was like a doctor conference or something for against COVID and
it was
all this horrible
stuff. The Horowitz Freedom Center. David Horowitz is alive and well, but what's his name? Andrew Breitbart is not.
Right.
Anyway, those things always intrigue me. But she spoke there and she said some interesting things to this effect, and maybe we'll have to, I don't know, maybe I thought about playing some of that, but you know, she spoke to what you were just talking about and some of the things that David was talking about, you know, being careful about what information we allow in, who we trust and those kinds of things. So
I just think overall, my personal experience is and I've talked to you about this before, but I walk around this world and I literally am so grateful all the time for how much I seem to know, seem to discern compared to other people, which seem hopelessly lost. And I guess it's because I must be doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, and I don't know. Did you hear my revised answer last week to your Halloween question about philosophy?
No. Could you say it again?
I gave a sort of a revised answer, and I wanted to just be clear that I really, you know, the more that you sort of stare into the abyss, you know, there is this. Attraction, I guess, whenever you start looking toward philosophy in whatever fashion, you know, it's just one of those things that somehow from a Christian perspective, it seems to kind of, it's like one of those addictions that feeds on itself.
Like fear porn.
And it's difficult, I think, by its nature. You know, there's in Proverbs, for example, I think it's Proverbs 7 that talks about, say to knowledge, you are an understanding, you are my, you know, basically treat this as a close companion or whatever. And if you think about it that way, then it's not like, you know, you wouldn't sit at dinner with your spouse or whatever, or your prospective spouse, and just do an interview and say, well, tell me what your favorite color is and this and that and this. You'd actually get to know somebody. And so it's that kind of intimate portrayal. But the danger is if we start to worship and idolize that like the Gnostics do, then that's obviously problematic. And so I think philosophy by its nature sort of operates that way. And if we're not careful, that's what can end up happening. I don't think that was really the nature of your question. And so I'm not saying that you were saying, you know, we should worship philosophy.
Yeah.
You were saying, you know, do you ever find comfort? And I said, yeah, you know, but anyway, with that in mind, what's that?
I just say fear of God, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and I guess that's more of my comfort zone.
Amen.
Than biblical knowledge.
Exactly. Yep. And so, you know, to come full circle on that, I think I would say 1 Corinthians 13:8. You know, 1 Corinthians 13 is the quintessential passage on love. How do you define love? 1 Corinthians 13 is it. But then, you know, and then you have gifts and things. But then 1 Corinthians 13 says, let me do NASB 95 because, you know, in the King James, it's charity, and charity has become a pejorative because we, you know, the sophists want to change how we think about things. Anyway, 1 Corinthians 13:8 in the NASB says, love never fails, but if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. If there are gifts of tongue, if there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, it will be done away. So love never fails, but if there is knowledge, it will be done away. And from a Christian perspective, why is that? It's because when Jesus shows up, and, you know, the wrong is put right and right is restored, then all things will be revealed. Everything will be known, as the Bible says over and over. And so there's none of this, you know, pursuit of knowledge. Speaking of Corinthians, you know, 1 Corinthians 1 is where Paul says, for Jews seek a sign and Greeks search for wisdom, which I always think of Kabbalism and Gnosticism, respectively. But, you know, the final analysis, like you said, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And
can I just say real quick?
Yeah.
I feared the Lord a long time ago, and so I've built up wisdom.
Yeah.
Wherever it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so now I walk around and I see other people making mistakes and saying foolish things, and
yeah.
And I'm literally delight. I'm not as terrible. I shouldn't delight in it, but I'm like, thank you, Lord, so much for that. I'm not falling into all those traps. Is that wrong?
Well, not necessarily wrong. I think from a humble perspective, you know, definitely. But, you know, we're supposed to be mature. I mean, Hebrews 5:14 says solid food is for the mature who, because of practice, have their senses trained to discern good and evil.
Have you ever had anybody hate you because you're mature and because you have knowledge and didn't make mistakes and they did?
I don't think so. I think it would be more because of my own arrogance or pride.
Right.
You know, if I'm being honest, you know, I could say yes, but I think it's probably, you know, I don't know. That's an interesting conversation. You know, maybe Jesus is the quintessential example to look at. Did they hate him for that reason?
Yeah.
Probably. You know, because
lot,
he was
Chris.
Encroaching. Yeah.
Oh. Great. I'll let you go.
Definitely.
End of the show. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chris. Much appreciated. That will do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative, perhaps even edifying. Please pray for one another and support the network. Didn't even get to that business. I'll do that tomorrow. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.